Okay. Welcome, everyone, joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. My name is Roy. My call sign is AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Eugene, KD2MDV, will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. We also offer original articles and reviews on many topics that are also covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club's website, and the link can be found on the front page of our website in orange color type. But if you would like a simple URL to find it, just type into your browser puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com, and we also have an EchoLink node available for use. Just point your EchoLink application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of every month. All of this information can also be found on our club's website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and Eugene, KD2MDV, will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here or use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net tonight, Eugene, KD2MTV. Good evening, Eugene.
This is KD2MTV. Good evening, Roy. Hope all is well, and I'm looking forward for a good net. Back to you.
As do I. We've been gone for a long time. I think this is the actual first legitimate technical net since early July. So I hope people have saved up their questions or their comments, but we'll see what the night gives us. So we're open for business. Anyone who has any questions or comments, please hit that push-to-talk. Give us your ID and your first name.
Hey, Net Control, this is AC2ZV William checking in for the TechNet. I got a couple of questions for you, and it's great to hear you online and over the air.
Okay, very good, William. Glad to hear you as well. Let's just find out if there's anyone else out there, just out of curiosity's sake. If anyone else would like to go on the list, please hit that push-to-talk and say hello. Okay, William, it appears that you're up first and only. What's your question tonight?
Roy, I got some bad news. C2CV, what happened is the insurance company flew these drones over the house, and they said that everything's got to go. And so I had to, like, get rid of everything on the roof. All I got is one little thin wire that's the old long wire, and I got a piece of coax going up to the middle of the roof. And I'm going to have to develop some kind of stealth 10 meters so I can get back on the air.
Okay, I'm a little bit confused. Who sent drones after you? And don't you own your property? I'm a little confused. The only people who usually get in people's faces is the fire department, if it's an apartment complex, and or insurance company. Otherwise, it's kind of your property, you know, so I'm a little confused.
Insurance company in the city, and they don't want anything on anybody's roof, apparently. And my setup was pretty, like, I had these 5-gallon buckets full of concrete with poles in it for the 10-meter antenna. I had 3 poles, and it was like I had a multi-band antenna set up. And that was, like, considered, like, too risky. So, anyway, it was easily removed, you know, with some strong men, and it's gone. themselves. I have the 10-meter antenna available, you know, for anybody in the club that wants a multi-band antenna. I got that all packed up. And, you know, I got to figure out some kind of new thing.
Okay, that's a problem. Where are you located? You're in Brooklyn, right? So again, I'm a little bit confused. The city is sending drones out to look at people's rooftops?
From what I got from my agent, it was an insurance company.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. It's usually the insurance company, although I don't know what triggers them. But if they think that there's some kind of hazard risk on the roof, geez, I hope this isn't the beginning of a trend. Well, you probably want to shrink down to something that's very, very as invisible as you humanly can. It sort of depends upon if you have any kind of natural places to kind of tie rope. You know, if you got a tree in front or in back of your house, and you can kind of tie one end somewhat hidden, just kind of do something like an end-fed half wave might be your answer instead of three attachments. You have two attachments and an end-fed half wave, you know, has minimal visibility. You can kind of paint it blue to kind of obscure it even a little bit more. So the big question is, if you have any natural thing or something that would look natural that you could use to support the end-fed wire.
AC2ZV. The only thing I got is the building. And the question is how to make something that would attach to the building in a way that wouldn't damage the roof, damage the everything else, whatever's up there, and then be able to hold. And I think probably it's going to require a very thin wire that actually, if the hurricane came through, it would break, and then nobody would get killed. So then the insurance company would be happy, something like that. But I'm thinking that I have an elevation difference, and I might be able to make a V thing that comes down from one core of the building and then goes to the other deck and then comes up to the other corner of the building. I don't know how to, like, find something simple that will be able to hook to parapet walls.
Okay, so that's more of a structural question than it is an amateur radio-related question. I don't think you necessarily have to have breakaway wires. God forbid a 18 or a 20 gauge insulated wire hits you, I mean, it's not like it's going to sever arteries or anything. So I'm not quite sure the need to have some kind of almost fuse thin wire that just kind of falls apart if it touches anything other than the wind. But I mean, you just have to survey what you got and what you can hide in other things. In the old days, people used to put up flagpoles, and they made the pole out of a insulated material. They strung a wire inside the insulated pipe material, and they had they had a vertical or they had an end fed. All kinds of different things. I don't know if your home is amenable to a flagpole or such. But, I mean, you know, you might want to thumb through the Internet, look for stealth antennas, and see what they come up with. If you're clever, sometimes guys will modify their gutters and get them to be resonant at the frequencies they're interested in, and it's basically a very well-hidden gutter antenna radiator. But there are a whole bunch of other interesting things out there. Just Google stealth antenna and amateur radio, and you'll probably have a long list of things. It depends upon what works the best for your type of environment.
I'm wondering what the lightest possible 5/8 10-meter antenna would be, and you know, if I could attach that to an old on the top of an old TV antenna, like installation. I got a little pipe with an old TV antenna that works on it, and then that could maybe hook something on the top, maybe a vertical, but it has to be very light and thin.
Well, I mean, you're going to get into trouble structurally. Unless you're going to get support wires or ropes, if it has to kind of hold itself up, you can't have it being a 26-gauge wire. I mean, as far as I'm aware, you know, again, I'm not quite sure what the insurance company is worried is going to happen. I mean, maybe they're more concerned about the cement pots and poles jutting into the sky. You know, maybe if it was just one simple 5/8 wave vertical. I have one. They work very nicely. They're not scary as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I can see it off the edge of my roof if I really try, but I didn't even need that much elevation off of the roof. I think the pole is about 6 feet. The 5/8 wave is, I forget, something like 15 feet. It's not obvious, but, you know, you see it in the right light, you know it's there. So I'm not quite sure exactly what you could get away with, what you can't get away with. But if you try to make it so thin that it's invisible, then you got a mechanical problem on your hands of where you're going to tie it to. And you've just kind of spread out the problem to other places. Because, you know, if it's just a 5/8 vertical just coming out of the aerial, and that's it, and that's just one site of people having a problem. If you're going to make it very thin and then have to tie it up with guy ropes, you're going to need at least two, probably three, and that's going to be a lot more visible, I would think. So probably best off to try with the 5/8 and see how your luck runs. I don't know. I mean, you probably have to sit down and read whatever they sent you just to kind of get a good idea. Because, again, theoretically, people have a right to put up antennas on their roof, you know, unless you move to Russia or something. You know, in Brooklyn, there is a law limiting the height for citizens' band antennas, but they don't apply to ham. So, you know, I'm not quite sure. Most of the guys that I've known who got into trouble with insurance companies, it was because they didn't own their property in the first place. And, you know, they were either co-op or rental, and there were other people who were concerned giving them the hard time. So I'm not quite sure. Again, I think you got to really peruse your notice that you received and kind of figure out if there's any kind of loopholes. And, you know, what do they got the problem with? Any antenna? You know, if it's any antenna, then it's illegal because people are supposed to be able to put up satellite antennas and television antennas. I mean, that's in the zoning. So, again, I think there was something that might have triggered them that maybe you can refine your design without those trigger elements?
KC2ZV. Well, you've certainly given me a lot to think about, and I like the idea of trying to try two or three different things and then see what goes through. The main thing we got to do is make sure that everybody calms down and the whole policy, the new policy goes through and everybody's happy, and then we got to do slow change. And I'm just needing to plan it out, probably, because it's not going to happen right away. So I like the 5/8 antenna thing. So that's one option. But the other thing I'm thinking of is like this NFED. I have a piece of coax going up to the roof. And the question is like, how do you make from the end of the coax into the NFED like so that you have a proper launcher, you know, into the NFED part?
It depends upon whether you're planning for a half-wave resonant NFED or a random non-resident NFED. If it's a random non-resonant NFED, you just need a let's see, what is it? I think it's a 16-to-1 ballon. If you want a resonant half wave, you need either a 49:1 or a 64:1. So it's basically a matter of the balun. The balun will supply all that you should need. It should have a coax connector on one end, and the other one should just have a wire connector where you connect one end of the end fed, and it would have a grounding counterpoise wire connector, and that should do it. So just again, either a 16:1 for the non-resonant, or a 49 or 64:1 for a half-wave resonant one, and that should give you, it should supply you with all the connections that you need to make it hopefully resonant.
To find the ground on the roof.
Unfortunately, there's a big difference between earth ground and RF ground. In this case, it's RF ground. You need a counterpoise is what it amounts to. So you don't have to connect it to the ground. You just have to give it a length of wire, run it on your roof. You don't have to elevate it per se. You could turn it right, left. If you determine the length. The length of a counterpoise for an end fed, there's a lot of stuff written on the internet, but a lot of people just kind of go up there with a piece of wire that they had sitting around and give it a try, and if it doesn't give them the performance, they'll change the counterpoise wire. So don't worry about finding a ground for your so-called end fed ground.
That's very interesting. How do you ever find out if anything works? So, I mean, I have this radio down here, which you've heard occasionally, this Kenwood, and I can send it up on that coax, and then I can't be running up and down. That's a big problem.
Okay, I'm not quite sure what the question was. I'll go back to what I think the first question was, because I think there was a second one. First question, how do you know if it works? Well, the problem, as always, is it's easy to measure some things and near impossible to measure other things. In a perfect world, if you were able to measure your radiation and your energy efficiency, those would be the two best ways of knowing that your antenna is acting well. There's no way of doing that unless you have a military budget. So the only thing that people can actually measure is their watts with watt meters, their reflected watts, and their SWRs. If you have a good match on your antenna tuner, then, you have a 1:1 SWR, you have a low reflection current coming back, and it's getting to the antenna. The problem is that a dummy load will give you all the same results and be a terrible antenna because its efficiency is miserable and its radiation power is negligible. So ultimately, for hams, if you transmit and people hear you, then your antenna works. If you transmit and no one hears you, then your antenna probably doesn't work.
Starting off with the fact that I can receive and I can hear the 10-meter net on a portable radio that's on the existing long wire, but I can't get the 10-meter radio to go into that long wire.
Yes. Receivers are incredibly more forgiving than transmitters because receivers are working with microwatts and transmitters are working with watts. So if you have a severe SWR mismatch on your receiving antenna and, 3/4 of a microvolt or microwatt gets reflected back, who cares? If you have a mismatch on your transmitter and, 10 or 20 watts of your transmitting power gets reflected back into the transmitting circuitry and you blow your transistors, that's not a good thing. So receivers are very forgiving because of the low microwatts that it's dealing with. And and also it is capable of amplifying very weak signals to signals that you can actually use. So, you know, receiving antenna is very forgiving, transmitting antenna is not too forgiving. So that's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah, this is AC2ZV over Echolink. So the thing is that I would think that if I can receive and I get a best quality receive, I should be able to then put the other radio online and have it communicate. But it doesn't seem to work like that for me. The other radio doesn't even receive as well as the little transistor one does.
Well, AC2GS here. Again, they're different beasts entirely. When you're trying to transmit, you're trying to shove at least 5, 10, maybe 100 watts of radio out the transmitter. But with receivers, you're only dealing with thousands or millions of a watt, and the rest is high gain, low noise amplification. So they work considerably different. Just because if you probably test that straight wire, it's got an SWR probably 10 to 1. So if you were to try pushing a transmitter signal through it, most of it would get right back into the transmitter circuit, and hopefully it would have safety features that would cut the power down a lot. Otherwise, it would just blow the circuits. Whereas, you know, you could mismatch as much as you want with a receiver. You're not going to blow the front end because it's only getting received power, which is, again, in the microwatts. So they're different beasts entirely, and they have different tolerances. Receivers are very tolerant. You could use anything. You could stick your finger on the antenna feed and use your body as an antenna. And, you know, sometimes on a good day, you can hear a signal that way. But for God's sakes, don't try it with a transmitter.
So can I give you a block diagram of what I got, and then maybe you'll understand me a little bit better?
Okay. If we were using slow scan TV, you could just send it on the radio.
I think I missed a lot of what you said. It seemed like that you went dark, and then I didn't hear anything, and then you ended a sentence. That's strange.
Yeah, well, I don't know what to tell you. I just mentioned that if we had slow scan TV, you could just kind of transmit the image of the block diagram. I'm still not quite sure what the block diagram is going to show. It's a fundamental concept between receivers and transmitters. That receiver, you don't have to worry. You know, no one mentions the SWR of a receiving antenna much. I mean, you will have optimum transfer of power from the receiving antenna to your receiver's front end if you match the loads. So, you know, when you have, you can use kind of receiver background noise to get a rough estimate of when you're approaching an SWR of 1 to 1. But even if it's really mistuned, you still can get some kind of a signal usually. It's just a lower amplitude one.
That's what's happening. But here, I'll tell you how to get the block diagram. If you've got a pencil and paper.
Yeah. Yes, I have a pencil and paper, William.
So you make one square, and you put in the middle of that square the Kenwood PS450 transceiver that I had that I used to be able to talk to you on the 10-meter net.
Yeah.
Texan, T-E-C-S-U-N, PL880. Antenna that's coming off of the Kenwood goes to an external SWR meter, and so there's another box right after the Kenwood that says SWR with a line coming from the Kenwood to the SWR meter. It's a CN501H. So now you have the antenna coming from the Texan and the antenna coming from the SWR meter, and that goes to a switch. That switch goes to an antenna tuner, which is an overkill DTR3KA matching transformer thing, goes out to a long wire.
Yeah.
I can get the 10-meter net on the Texan, but when I throw the switch and I put the other radio on, the Kenwood, I doesn't hear it as well at all, and I can transmit it. It doesn't seem to have bad SWR, but you can't hear me. I tried.
Okay, well, there's a whole bunch of different things. Number one, not all receiver, considering your transceiver is a receiver transmitter and the other one that's just a receiver, not all front ends are sensitive in the same way. Some are more selective, some are more general, so they pick up every frequency, but they run into trouble because they can't differentiate on frequency and off frequency. And so, you know, every different design for a radio receiver has a different gain. And if you're telling me that your Kenwood can go to that straight wire and you can use an antenna tuner and tune it to a SWR of close to 1-to-1, it once again goes back to what I was mentioning earlier, that you can kind of tune a doorknob if your antenna tuner is up to the job, but that doesn't really give you any information of the efficiency of that transfer and the radiation pattern of that transfer. You can get an SWR of 1-to-1 on a dummy load, but you don't want to use a dummy load as an antenna because its efficiency is close to zero and its radiation is negligible. It, you know, depending upon how much money you pay for it, the more expensive, the more it's shielded so that it's not radiating any energy. But I mean, my 2 kilowatt dummy load leaks around the edges, and I was able to chat with Howard and 2GOT. I hooked up my radio to my dummy load. He hooked up his to his dummy load, and we had a conversation back and forth, which kind of demonstrated that both of our dummy loads are not high quality things. To get a really effective dummy load that doesn't radiate much costs thousands and thousands of dollars. You know, engineers, technicians, people working for a living with these things will pay that amount of money. Hams won't. So, you know. So I mean, that's what's going on. It's just the wire is good enough to receive the signal, especially on the receiver that seems to have higher gain, but it doesn't have enough efficiency to get your signal through all the ground wave obstructions between your house and mine. You know, maybe if you were on the water and I was across the bay, it would be enough to get the signal across, but with buildings and other things in our way, the ground wave propagation is just disrupted too much for us to be able to chat.
Yeah, I know. I was hoping that one of those guys that has a really powerful radio would come on to the 10-meter net, and I would see then the difference between what I could get on the little radio and what I could get on the Kenwood. But anyway, he didn't come on, because sometimes you have these guys that have these really booming signals, and they're a lot louder than you are. Have you noticed that?
Not particularly. I use my amplifier for 500 watts, which is probably overkill for local. I rationalize that that propagating, gets me a little bit farther. So I'm running 500 watts. Most people on the net aren't. They're running 1 or 200 watts, sometimes even less. So I'm not really aware of anyone who turns their linear amplifiers all the way up to 1,500.
I don't know if he turns it up to 1,500, but I pick him up better than you, so maybe he's a neighbor of mine. So that could be something else that's in the equation. Anyway, you've given me a lot of good ideas. And the thing is that I do have this other piece of coax going to the roof. So on that block diagram, I can put another switch in, and then I could just run a balun up on the end of the piece of coax and throw another wire out on the roof, probably two wires, one that would drape over one way and one that would drape over another way, and there would be random length, and then I just get a balun and then have somebody go and kick it around.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's what you're really kind of talking about is what usually is called a doublet. A doublet looks identical to a center-fed dipole, except the legs are not resonant. And then most of the magic is done at the antenna tuner. The problem with doublets is that the best functionality for a doublet is when you have the antenna tuner at the feed point of the doublet. So, you know, that would kind of require either using open line transmission wire, which is has very low attenuation loss, then you have the antenna tuner at your shack, or if it's coax that has significant attenuation loss with reflected signals that you'll get from terribly non-resonant antennas, you have to put it at the feed point and, you know, get one that operates remotely. So you apply DC power in the shack through the coax, and that powers the antenna tuner that's located at the site of the antenna feed for the doublet. Otherwise, you're going to have to kind of put an antenna that's somewhat resonant. It gives you half of a chance. Because if you just kind of plug it into a coaxial cable and then, you know, match it at your shack, a significant amount of the energy is going to get reflected back and forth, up and down, and get dissipated as heat.
I think you just told me what I wanted to know. What I'm looking for, this is what I think I'm looking for. I think I'm looking for an outdoor package that's going to have an antenna tuner that can go and run a long wire. But that antenna tuner outdoor package has got to be outdoors, and then I can hook that onto the coax that I have and have some kind of controller down here that I can, like, tune it remotely to get that long wire to work. And that's what I think I'm going to be looking for.
AC2GS. Okay, that's a real thing. That's available. I'm not sure, but I think ICOM sells something like that, where it's a weatherproofed antenna tuner, and it hooks up to a long length of wire. So, you know, just Google or go to DX Engineering and just kind of look up different things, because there are weather-protected, shielded, remote-operated antenna tuners out there. They cost, unfortunately, more than shack-based remote automated antenna tuners. And you could do that. People have done that before, and you can do that too. And it's probably very difficult for anyone to kind of recognize what might be going on. It's rather obscure. And, you try and kind of give it as much elevation as you can, but if you can't, you try it on the ground of the roof, and you see what happens.
The roof is pretty high, and it's got a good clear sky, you know, to the south. I mean, the north, we have all the buildings and everything of downtown, which are probably good reflectors, but then to the south, it's open. So I think that that's a really good idea. So I'm going to look for a weatherproof housing thing that I can screw on the end of the existing coax. I get a 100-foot run going up there, and probably cut it back to 80 feet, but I don't think it'll make any difference. And then, we'll see if that's a way of working. Let's put another switch in so I can try that instead of the other claptrap I've got.
Okay, but you might want to consider a commercial, a manufactured version with gaskets and such that are just kind of designed to be exactly what we've been talking about. I mean, you might pay a couple more shekels, but you're not going to have any kind of weird leaks and such that could ruin the equipment on the first day that it rains outdoors.
What do you mean? I mean, I have had TV antennas like that with preamps and stuff in them. And there should be a way of having an active component. It doesn't need to be that big, but it needs to be able to take a little stuff and be able to attach to something so it doesn't blow off the roof for the insurance company. So it doesn't seem like that much, and I have a place to attach it.
Okay. I wish you well. I wish you luck. Again, you might want to investigate companies that have a kind of prefabricated. Again, I'm not 100% sure, but I think ICOM has a model that works similar to that. And so, you know, it's all in one package. It has an automated antenna tuner that can be remotely controlled at the shack, and there's a way to inject a DC voltage to power it, and it's sealed with a gasket, and so it's weatherproof. But, you know, if you want to try to build your own, I wish you luck.
AC2ZV, I'm not going to build my own. I'm going to find something like that that I can buy, and then I'm going to hook wire to it. And the question then becomes is, like, how thin a wire can I get away with? I mean, how thin does the wire really need to be an antenna? Just enough to support the wire itself? Or does it, you know, or should it be strong so it can take the wind, like a number 10?
I don't think you need a number 10. I mean, there are certainly mechanical constraints. I would not use something like a 28-gauge, you know, hair-thick wire, because anything can just rip it to shreds. You know, you could have a 20 gauge or an 18 gauge, and it would be fine. You can get one with insulation, and the insulation color you could try to match the roof, so there won't be any real contrast to it. So the thickness of the wire, other than in severe cases of very fine wire being mechanical nightmares, is pretty much dependent upon the amount of output power you're going to put into it, because its surface resistance is going to go up as you make the gauge higher and higher and the wire thinner and thinner, and ultimately it'll be a resistor, not a radiator. But, you know, as long as you have something, you know, it's not like you're going to throw 2,000 watts on that piece of wire. So, again, probably a 20-gauge wire will suffice, will be more than sufficient for your needs. And, again, you can consider getting an insulated version with a jacket that matches somewhat the color of your roof.
I think the 20-gauge solid would be fine, something like that. I mean, I've got, like, thermostat wire, which is, like, six of, like, 20 gauges all in one brown jacket. And if I, like, twisted all those together, would that be a good thing? Or should I go with a single wire?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of good points and bad points for both solid and you know, combined. A solid wire, probably, you know, the only real difference is if it's made out of multiple wires, it's more flexible. But you don't necessarily need flexibility in an antenna. So you might just want the solid mechanical aspect of a single wire. But, you know, either will work for you. There's nothing particularly wrong with either choice that kind of would make me say absolutely don't use that stuff. So solid or strands, you know, whatever you got available.
So my whole idea is that it will just be like laying on the roof or something like that, and then draped over the parapet, and then it'll be so long, sort of a random length, and then I'll see what happens. And then maybe I'll join you on the 10-meter net in a month or two.
Yeah, well, it's a plan. You see how it works. NFED random, it sounds like yours is going to be more of a random than it is a half wave. You know, some people love them, some people hate them. Some of them work out beautifully, some of them are terrible. So you don't know until you try. But you got to kind of figure out what you're going to do. It's either going to be a half wave resonant or it's going to be a non-resonant, because that's going to determine the balance. Because even though you're going to have a antenna tuner at the feed point, antenna tuners are not designed for the severe mismatch that a half-wave NFED is going to give it. So you're still going to have to transform the impedance at the feed point of a NFED half-wave from, you know, it's 3,000 plus ohms to something relatively closer to 50 ohms that the tuner can match to.
One of these deals, which is prepackaged and stuff like that, that antenna tuner, is that going to have that Balun that you were talking, 64 to 1, 49 to 1, is that going to have that built in, or do I need to buy two components?
Well, it sort of depends. If it's designed as an antenna system, so it gives you the antenna or the piece of wire, and it gives you the antenna tuner, most likely they include the ballon along with it, because it seems rather weird if they're going to give you the antenna wire not to give you the ballon. But, you know, you can check. You know, sometimes they'll say, we'll require such and such ballon. So it sort of depends on the manufacturer of how complete the solution they offer people.
I'm going to call DX Engineering and talk to them, and I'll report back in a month or so, or maybe a couple of weeks, who knows.
Okay, very good. DX Engineering is a good company. I've dealt with them repeatedly through the years, and the salespeople are knowledgeable. So I hope they give you some good advice, and I hope you have good luck, and hope you come back and tell us that it was a crowning success.
Great. Thanks a lot, Roy, and maybe there's somebody else out there with some questions.
Okay, once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. Anyone out there has any questions or comments of a technical nature, please hit that push to talk and say hello.
AD2DU.
Yes, Alex. What can I do for you tonight?
I got a GMRS radio also. It's like channelized. And I'm going to put up an antenna. I have a Diamond X50A up on the roof for VHF, UHF. How far apart do the antennas have to be if I have both a GMRS and a 2-meter 440 Kenwood on at the same time? AD2DU.
It depends what you kind of mean by on at the same time. I assume what you mean is you're going to be transmitting on one or the other at a time, and the other one will be set to receive. So your concerns are that you don't want to blow out the front end. Although you're going to be on different bands, so these receivers would have to have really terrible front ends that leaked like sieves. So that's what you mean, correct? You're concerned that you might blow out the front end by overwhelming the other radio with the transmitted output of the other. How high power are you planning to push through these antennas?
This old Kenwood TMV71A is probably putting out 50 watts right now, and the GMRS radio, I think, puts out 40. I'm going to end up trying to talk on GMRS to my father-in-law's house in Ozone Park. I'm going to put an antenna in his attic. It'll give me something to do when I go over there. And this is, you know, not out of the goodness of my own heart. Under the guise of emergency planning, I'll play with the radio. 82DU.
Okay. I mean, I don't think that this is a big problem. Again, it might be a problem if you were operating on the same frequency, but you're operating on different frequencies, and so there's going to be a significant attenuation, at the front end to begin with. I wouldn't put both of them, you know, 1 foot away from each other, because you're kind of tempting fate and all kinds of things. But I mean, you know, depending upon how much space that you have available, you know, try to put them as far apart on the roof as is comfortable for you to do, but, you know, you don't have to go crazy. You know, I would imagine 10 feet distance, you wouldn't have to worry about anything.
Got it. Is airband far enough away from GMRS and a 2-meter 440 antenna that it's useful to have a separate airband antenna if you like plane chatter in the background?
As we mentioned earlier, that receivers are very forgiving for mismatches, so you might be able to get away with an antenna that is not tuned for the frequencies that you're interested in. If you want to have the optimum reception, then you might want a legitimately resonant antenna for that frequency. But, you know, depending upon the general amplitude of the RF that gets into your mismatched antenna, you know, receivers can be very forgiving. You know, I would suggest, you know, give it a try, see what it works out to be, and if you're not really pleased with the reception quality, you can then consider getting a third antenna.
It's tough to know when you're pleased with airband or not, because, like, some planes are too far away and come in staticky, and you just don't know until you try it that you would get it in better. Let it drop for a second.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want the best, you know, if you don't want to kind of be in the kind of gray zone and say, gee, I wonder if, then you spring for the specifically tuned antenna, and you see after the fact if it was worth the trouble.
Have you ever played with the AirSpy R2? Because I think that may get VHF, UHF. I was surprised to hear Williams say the PL-880 can get the 10-meter net. I thought the 10-meter net would have been just outside the Texan PL-880's range. My Texans only go to like 28-100, if I remember correctly.
Well, our frequency is 28-380.
Yeah, I don't know if he had received the tech net or the 10-meter net yet on the PL-880, or was just going to try it out. But the PL-880 is like one of the only ones in that line of Texan radios I haven't owned. But I've had the 990 and I've had the 680. I think it is. So the 10-meter net is a little too high. I wonder if I'll ever get on with RF with you for that without a dedicated 10-meter antenna, because I'm too close to bounce off the atmosphere.
I mean, why don't you think that you'd be able to get ground wave propagation?
I don't know. Maybe I'll just try another 10-meter antenna. I have an NFED half-wave 40 to 10, like 63-foot wire on top of the roof. And I just generally can't pick it up, and I'm not exactly sure why. Since I get good contacts on 10-meter. A guy from Japan posted a video of our contact on YouTube. I was thrilled today. I just saw it.
Ah, very good. Maybe it's just a matter of the radiation pattern favors, the takeoff angle favors ionospheric skywave type of propagation, not ground wave.
Yeah, I want to see if I can use airline pilots as baby white noise. Or that plan may get vetoed really quickly if there's too much static.
Well, you know, give it a try. Worst things happen. It's an experiment that you learn something not to do again.
Just out here seeing what I can get away with, Roy. You know how it is. 82 to you. Over.
Yep. I wish you good luck, Alex, in all endeavors, especially these kind of. We tinker and see what we can get away with.
Vertical antenna have a more circular radial pattern, because the NFED, I'm assuming, I can't reorient the house, and my neighbor doesn't like anything attached to her roof, so I guess I can climb up there and put up like a Wolf River coil or something, but that I don't think I can leave permanently. The other problem is the vertical antenna could fall over on a power wire.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of things. I wouldn't particularly recommend looping an NFED because that's kind of takes on a different set of qualities, but you could be creative with having it zigzag a bit. It doesn't necessarily have to be a perfectly straight line.
A guy on Etsy sells an NFED and a random wire that he comes in a 3D printed roll-up, like, coil loop. Which I found super convenient if you're alone and trying to set up different configurations of an NFET. Although I haven't been back up to the roof of my work building to play with that in a month or two. Over.
A little curious, when you say the coil or loop or something, I mean, do you mean that it's like a slinky? Because, I mean, people have pulled that also. Instead of a straight piece of wire, they'll take a metal slinky type of structure and treat it as an NFET. And, you know, put a 64-to-1 ballon on one end and a coax, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, again.
I have a really bad picture of the Slink Tenna on my QRZ, actually. I own it as kind of a quick deploy, if I need it, HF antenna. You need a tuner, though. But it's a fun, it's small enough where you can just put it up really anywhere. but Slink Tenet. I think he sells them on, I follow the guy on Twitter.
Yeah, they sell almost anything on Twitter. It's doable, again, as long as you have some kind of impedance transforming device to kind of smooth out some of the problems. That'll at its worst, it'll give you a decent dummy load, and at its best, it'll give you a good compromise antenna. But, I mean, none of these types of antennas are sort of designed to operate without some kind of impedance transforming mechanism, because unless you're very, very lucky that you just happen to cut it at its resonant points or multiples, odd multiples of harmonics of it. So otherwise, it's always going to need some tweaking with some impedance matching circuits at high, a T, an L, what have you.
Have you ever used a GMRS repeater? I hear of all the time on the GMRS things, but it seems like the amateur radio repeaters do the same job more effectively. But there do seem to be some nets on GMRS.
Yeah, I AC2GS, by the way. I assume that they're doing well. I think they're a little bit more serious than Citizens Band people. I every so often during the 10-meter net, because we used to have a problem with a guy with a noisy linear amplifier on 11 meters being heard on our net, I still kind of look at it every so often. And when I turn the audio up, it's like some terrible FM zoo from hell. So I think GRMS takes things a little bit seriously. But, you know, if you don't have a ham license, I understand it. But if you have a ham license, it's sort of, I told people when Limark decided that they were going to have a net for scanners. I said, you know, that's sort of like handing a guy a tricycle. You know, if you already got a DMV license for a car, you know, what are you doing with a tricycle? So for people who aren't licensed, you know, it's an easy fix. You pay the fee and you get your license, and it includes your entire family. And, you know, if you want to contact each other, it doesn't require any studying of anything. But I've never felt the curiosity to kind of go deep and see what they have to offer. My understanding is that they're very few GMRS repeaters generally, and a lot of times they're not open to everyone. You have to pay a fee to belong. Could be wrong with it. I'm just hearing these secondhand things.
Yeah, I wanted the ability to transmit on all bands. I've never transmitted on CB, but I'm pretty sure if I had to mod the G90, I could, but I'm not good at that stuff. But I got a GMRS radio just to have the capability and to give me a good excuse to set up radio equipment at the in-laws house that I'll be able to play with when I'm over there. Over.
Okay, I mean that's something to aim at. For me, it would be kind of like there's not enough hours in the day because. The bandwidth, you can go from very low frequency. Those guys are amusingly called loafers. Up until recently, you could only get an experimental license because the Navy submarines were using those very low frequencies. But you could go very low into the microwaves. The problem is more of the places that most people don't go, most people aren't. So, you know, even if you go to 220, you'll get a lot less activity than if you went to UHF or VHF. And then, you know, if you go to microwave, if you have a friend and you can schedule together, otherwise, lots of luck. You probably will be talking to yourself. So there are a lot of frequencies where the activity is sparse and getting sparser every day. But, you know, if you want to kind of tag base, there's a lot of bases to tag, I guess.
Separate topic, but you know, I saw on Amazon that I was thinking about, I got to figure out how to have TV audio without headphones, and I was looking at an FM transmitter. You know, they sell 1-watt or 7-watt FM transmitters on Amazon. There's no way that doesn't interfere. It's got to be FCC illegal right out of the box. AD2DU.
Yeah, I'm sure it's Chinese cheap stuff. and they break the rules all over the place. So yeah, Amazon is a useful storefront, but they let a lot of people get away with a lot of silly things that they shouldn't. I complained a while back, I think on the Limar TechNet, that you can buy fake, intensely high pseudo capacity thumb drives still on Amazon, and they're not legit. They're cheap, and you could look it up. You find something like 4 terabyte thumb drive for $16.95, and obviously it isn't that capacity. So they sell all kinds of marginally questionable things. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. I once ordered from China a Tesla coil, a portable Tesla coil that was designed in the shape of a gun. It wasn't a gun. It just had a trigger that shot the lightning bolts. It went all the way to import, and it got turned around and sent back to China. So I went to Amazon and got the exact same thing for a little bit more. They didn't care that it looked like a gun or whatever. So, they sell all kinds of interesting things that are probably not quite legal.
Do you think the separation between Amazon and AliExpress seems to be going down over time? I see the same items on both, and it seems to just be the same.
Well, I think the point is that the original manufacturers are using both as retail outlets. If you're willing to wait a month and get it shipped from China, which is subsidized by your tax dollars, then it costs less. If not, and you're willing to pay extra for the intermediary who receives stored up supplies from the same Chinese manufacturer and then drop ships it in the United States in a day or two, then they're happy with that. So it's the same stuff. All this cheap Chinese garbage has flooded the market and kind of destroyed the middle end of items. I used to get these little displays that were lit with LEDs, and they had little motors, and they turned around. It was very nice. And then all of a sudden, the Chinese decided that they would flood the market with crap that broke in an hour and a half. And because everyone went for the cheap stuff, they stopped buying the more expensive stuff, and so the more expensive stuff went out of business. So now all we're left with is the cheap stuff that breaks.
Yeah, I mean, I just try to buy real stuff from the, DX Engineering or Ham Radio Outlet, and, I guess I need to buy power poles from PowerWorks, too. But other than that, why antenna wire I bought on Amazon without a problem? I don't know what other cheap stuff I got. Oh, garden plant ties is my new thing for wires, and I love them, and they're the best.
Oh, okay. I got this weird thing that's basically a long piece of wire wrap on a roll with a little metal cutter. So you pull it out to whatever length you need, and then you squeeze on it, and that snaps the wire and separates it. It could go both ways, though, with coax cable, because as long as you buy a name brand, you don't usually have any problem. The problem is that if you buy some kind of off-brand from China, it might be wonderful stuff, it might be awful stuff. Years and years ago, you played Russian roulette with Radio Shack, because Radio Shack never made anything. They simply bought other companies' production runs, and they would change producers depending upon, the profit that they could make. So every so often, Radio Shack would buy this big supply of the worst coax cables anyone has ever seen. You open up the rubber cover, and it doesn't have braids, it has random wires on the outside, and they work terribly. So I would be a little bit cautious about a coaxial cable on Amazon, but as long as they have a legitimate brand name that doesn't just sound like a legitimate brand name, you should be fine. I've bought coax cables through Amazon, through America American companies that specifically, you know, that they were using Micro Time. I think that's the name that LMR is made from.
Oh, I mean, for my GMRS radio, I definitely bought the cheapest Chinese setup I could find. I don't care about that one, but for the 7300, it's on the real stuff. But I don't like that thick LMR 400 because you can't bend it around, and it turns the radio so thick.
So what do you use, LMR 240 or something else? Or, you know, there's 400 Flex, which is a little bit more flexible than the standard LMR 400.
I think what I've been buying is RG8X, which, like, it seems fine to me. I don't know. Maybe it's not high quality enough. 82 to you.
Okay, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people that use that. I mean, that goes back to World War II. You know, it depends what your needs are. Some people kind of act real goofy. They'll want a transmission line to feed a 70-centimeter antenna, and for some odd reason they'll decide to get RG58. And they put the antenna as far away as humanly possible. So it's 100 plus feet of RG58 try to go to 440, and they wonder why they're having problems. But, you know, most people, the LMR 400 is a little bit overkill. But, you know, I've always used it. You know, I use flexible. I use LMR 240. I kind of keep with those things, and yeah, I don't really mind. It's not that much of a nuisance for me.
I mean, my setup is far less professional than yours, I'm sure. I still have these wires running just through an open window. I don't even have a pass-through, but I'm at a rental is the other thing.
Okay, you know, different strokes for different folks. I have a ground bus bar. I bought a couple of MFJs feed through. You know, it's basically a pane of wood with a bunch of holes drilled through it with some metal shielding and grounding, and I run my cables through the holes there, and then I weatherproof them. You know, there are guys out there who their shack is basically their kitchen counter. They set up in about 10, 15 minutes. They break it in another 10 minutes, and they do well with that.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, I got to professionalize because my radio room, unfortunately, now the baby room. So changes are going to happen until I can buy a house here, which, you know, who's got 1.2 million laying around. But thank you for the info. 82 to you.
Okie dokie. Good luck. Once again, I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month, starting at 9 p.m. Anyone else out there with any questions or comments for tonight? Okay, well, we made it to 10:15. Anyone interested in the TechNet puzzle? You know, depends on the audience. If you're interested, we'll do it. If not, we'll put it away for next time.
I don't know that I know them often, but you can give it a shot. And if nobody else hears it, you can use it again. 82 to you.
Okay, I mean, that certainly is an option. Well, it sort of depends on people's motivation, because this one, unfortunately, is illustrated. So I can't just read it on the radio. People have to go to the trouble of going to the website and looking at the graphs, because basically there's four graphs, and the question is, which graph shows the change in reactance of a capacitor as the frequency increases? So depending upon you guys out there, if any of you actually want to look up the website and see what the curves look like and then give me an answer, I'll hear it.
AC2ZV, I can see it.
Okay, William, you want to tell everyone the answer?
I think I'd look at this for a few more minutes. Maybe somebody else out there like Eugene wants to venture a guess.
Okay, Eugene, I think you've been challenged. Would you like to enter a guess?
This is KD2MDV. No, I'm not looking at the diagram. I haven't looked it up, so no answer.
Okay, so I guess it's just you, William. We'll give you a minute or so of air silence, and when you feel ready, hit that push to talk.
AC2ZV. Yeah, I looked at that. It's hard to tell much from what you said, but I would assume that if you like keep cranking the frequency up on a capacitor, there'll be a certain point where it reaches resonance, and there'll be a point where it drops off. And so if that's the case...
Yeah, I don't think we got the end of your sentence. It kind of, you left us dangling. And by the way, capacitors don't really experience resonance. RC circuits, LC circuits, but capacitors don't resonate.
Well, I'm assuming there's resistance, you know, because there's always resistance somewhere. So, you know, that's what I'm thinking, unless you're talking it's a filter, you know, and that's a different story.
No, it's a very simple capacitor, and you're measuring the capacitive reactance as a function of its frequency. The X is frequency, the Y is reactance of the capacitor. So, you know, as you increase the frequency of a current going through a capacitor, does the reactance stay the same, increase, decrease? And in what way, for the four curves that are given, is the closest thing to the way that capacitive reactance is altered by frequency?
Okay, so in that case, I'll say it's 2 because you can always get rid of high frequencies by putting capacitors on things, so that will shunt it to ground, high frequencies to ground. So 2, the reactants would go down. So anyway, I got you 2 guesses, so 2 is the final answer.
Right. The answer was the second chart, which is the way that this thing was worded, answer C, graph 2. So yeah, it's the reactance decreases as you increase frequency for a capacitor, and does the exact opposite for an inductor. And when you put inductors and capacitances together, it's the frequency at which the capacitive and inductive reactants end up becoming equal with opposite signs that you get a resonance structure. Okay, well, I think that's it for tonight. If anyone else has any comments, questions, or what have you, feel free to hit that push to talk.
Yeah, AC2ZV. Yeah, thanks a lot, Roy. Really enjoyed the TechNet tonight. Thanks for all your suggestions. And 73, have a great evening.
Thank you very much, William, and thanks to everyone out there. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York, and we meet on the first Wednesday of each month, usually. This coming October, we will be meeting on the second Wednesday because of the high holidays. Our next meeting will be October 9th. Which will be held by teleconference. Club members will be emailed with the details of logging into the meeting. Non-members wishing to join a general meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin after 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from about 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m. We also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 or nearby. We offer an audio stream of the KC2RC repeater on the internet as well as our 10-meter net. Just type in stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services are generously donated by a local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, 3 Aliens Web Hosting, who we'd like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. Yeah, it's time to roll this all up and shut it down, but we'll be back October 23rd to do it all over again, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially to Eugene, KD2MDV. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself like I have been previous technical nets this summer. Anyway, this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. Everyone, take it easy, be well, we'll talk to you down the line.